My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Four. Now, it's Jeffrey Wright and Company.
Tell your story.
Live on Memphis' sports station, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can always listen on 92.9 FM ESPN, 680 AM, but you always keep up with all of the content here at 92.9 on the Odyssey app. It's free to download. It's free to listen. You can even rewind if you missed a segment. You want to go back and listen to a previous segment. Download the Odyssey app today. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company this week, former Associate Athletic Director for Communications at the U of M, longtime writer for the CA, former sports editor for the CA. He's on Twitter at Phil_Stukenborg. Phil, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
Let's tell everybody we got coming up on the program. We've kind of moved the schedule around a little bit. Normally, Tim Murray would have joined us yesterday. Tim had some scheduling conflicts. Cobb pinched hit. So we're going to replace Cobb today with Tim. But Tim's going to join us at 3:05. So rather than next segment having our guest, he'll join us to start the second hour. It is Wednesday, so we'll start with Buy, Sell Short or go to Reddit. We'll discuss some Tiger football, a little bit of the Olympics. Then we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll get into the list. Lots to get to there. We'll also have the U.S. women's national team play their quarterfinal basketball game this afternoon. Unreal practice highlight video from App State that we got to talk about. Michigan, or I should say, I guess Jim Harbaugh, does get a big-time punishment. There's already been some injuries. We'll get into all that during the list. We'll talk some college football with Tim Murray when he joins us at 3:05. We'll get into the NFL. Hard Knocks debuted last night, our season debut. I watched it all. I'll give a quick review, some of the highlights, things that I found entertaining. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But it's Wednesday. Let's play Buy, Sell Short or Go to Reddit.
It's that time with Jeffrey and Company, where we either buy, sell short, or go to Reddit on 92.9.
Okay, Phil, here is the name of the game. It is indeed Buy, Sell Short or Go to Reddit. Think of it in these. I know this is a groundbreaking radio segment. You've never heard of anything quite like buying or selling. But I'm going to make a statement, and either if you like it, you want to buy it. I always say if you want to sell, it's not even that you necessarily don't like it. It's just that you're kind of fine. Like, you can kind of, I'm good not having this in the old portfolio. Short. You want to bet against it. If you hear that statement, you'd like to bet against it, make your profit that way. Go to Reddit was just a cop-out, and eventually we kept it because it was the tagline, but I basically quit letting Mark use it. So, with that being said, are we ready?
We're ready.
Buy, sell short, or go to Reddit. This is the biggest season in Tiger football history.
Definitely buy it.
Dennis, I think we have the wrong mic on, maybe.
Is it on now?
There we go. Okay. Now we're good. Now we're good.
Definitely buy it.
I think so. And I think it's for a few reasons other than just preseason expectations. How many actual opportunities are you going to get to be a playoff team?
That's it. And that's number one. I mean, that's what you play for today. That's your slim margin to get into the playoff, and you are the team. It makes it the biggest season. They've had great seasons with great schedules. Tennessee, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Arkansas. It had been a lot of fun, but nothing that afforded you a chance to play for a national title.
And I think the other reason why is, I think if you think back to where the fan base was to start last season, where at best it felt like people were lukewarm on Ryan.
And they were.
And now everyone's kind of gotten on board. And they've gotten on board for several reasons. Number one, he won 10 games. Number two, the success in recruiting. Number three, when you think about a school like Memphis being outside of the power structure, the ability to keep players feels like a very difficult task. And for the large part, he's done so. Retaining and maintaining the roster, it's been a huge part of it. So I think everybody's willing. And to me, if there is even, I don't even know how you define like setback, but like I just really think even if you don't win the conference, to me, it feels like people are going to kind of be right back. Maybe not all the way back to where they're lukewarm at best or out on him at some point, but I just think it's really, when you've decided that you're meh on somebody at best, it's a lot easier to fall back and be like, meh.
You've got a quarterback back, and the fact that he declared early, we said this the other day, that to me tells you a lot about what he recruited. Not only did he recruit a great player, but one that's loyal. And if that went back to the dad who was
Coach,
coaching, yeah. I mean, there's something about that. So if that was that was a recruiting coup, if he was able to read through that,
I think that's 100% it. I was also trying to think of what are other seasons that would have qualified, because even if you take the 2019 season, which ends up becoming kind of a dream season, they were picked to win the division, but everyone still thought Cincinnati and UCF for sure. And then Cincinnati were ahead. And I think as the season went on, that was, because I remember it was like, as the season went on, I think we were trying to figure out which bowl game would be the Access Bowl. Because I think for a while, everybody thought they were going to the Peach. And then
right.
They wind up going to the Cotton. Like, we were trying to figure out which one is the G5 game. But like, it wasn't, that season wasn't win the league or bust. Whereas it really does, fairly or unfairly, feels like to me that's going to be the standard.
Yeah, I mean, again, we're back to the Conference USA basketball.
Yes,
you know, set up back in Calipari's days, where you, if you didn't win, I mean, it was expected that you would win and you would win easily, and I think that happened. The only other season to me that kind of started out where it ended up with the game day,
yeah,
down on Beale Street. I mean, that season built its own momentum.
Yes,
and then when the missed field goal at Tulsa, and when that happened, then all of a sudden, everything blew up, and you knew the possibilities were there.
Now, I've heard when everyone likes to do the butterfly effect, I believe I think it was like a 29-yarder. Like, it wasn't quite an extra point, but I'm nearly certain it was inside it was inside 30 yards. The butterfly effect would have been, Mike would have been at Baylor.
Right.
And I'm trying to remember who was going to go to Arkansas. Or, I'm sorry, who was going to Florida State. But like it was like, if that field goal doesn't go through, that the fact that they won the league and made the Access Bowl made it more palatable to Florida State. Because I remember Florida State originally had their eyes set on, they weren't quite doing like the groomer when Tennessee would lock in on John Gruden. Like, they didn't quite have groomers, but their eyes were definitely bigger than their stomach. And because I remember I was on a golf trip during the bowl game, and I was down in Florida. And my caddy was a big Florida State fan. And he's like, so what do you think? I was like, he'll win. And they were all still kind of lukewarm on him. And it's funny how just go and win, and it'll change a little bit.
It's also strange to think that one field goal, look what that affected, one missed field goal.
I know.
I mean, Norvell, I mean, you're talking about the game day, going to the Cotton Bowl. Does Ryan Silverfield end up being your coach? I mean, there's all kind of...
I think the answer's probably no.
Yeah, and look at that. That's one missed field goal. I mean, one missed field goal.
Right. Well, then on top, it's not even just the Cotton Bowl doesn't happen. Then you're talking about, what, Fenway Bowl or something? You know what I mean? Like, it's... Instead of like the party down in Dallas, you know, you're probably going somewhere that it's not really awesome to play football in December.
Right.
And so some of the program, well, I mean, heck, in the thing out in the football building, like all the banners and stuff, they're like the big mural of game day and whatnot. Like, you don't even have that image.
Right.
I mean, do you even get what's the attendance of the SMU game?
Oh, it was 58?
No, but I'm saying, like,
what would it have been?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it would have been half that.
That's changed one thing. College kickers, God bless them.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who would have been the Florida State coach. May have been Lane. Lane may have ended up being the Florida State coach. Because I'm trying to remember that cycle. Mike goes to Florida State. Lane went from FAU to Ole Miss. And Pittman is at Arkansas. Because originally, Lane was down to Arkansas and Ole Miss and picked Ole Miss. Is that Heupel's cycle? Or is Heupel the year after?
I want to think he's the year after.
I think he is, too. I think he's a year removed. But, I mean, that would have been, like, the ultimate what could have been. And, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, you know... Now, then you do, like, you even play it out more. It's like, does Florida State even get into the position last year? I mean, maybe. I mean, I think Lane and Mike are comparable coaches, but Mike seems to have... It seems to me that Florida State's kind of a... You've got to be the governor as well. Like, you got to kind of have that politics angle. And Lane does not do that.
And Mike does.
And Mike Mike loves to work a room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is what's made. And Ole Miss is a perfect spot for Lane because as long as he's winning, they'll let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And so it probably worked out for all parties. Maybe not Baylor, but you won the Big 12 once with Aranda. Now you're unsatisfied. And then I think the other aspect of it is, I think almost for, like, fan psyche, I think you probably need to, like, have this be a year where you cap it off. And to me, it's like, I don't even necessarily know if that means make the playoff, but I think you win the league. I think the fan base is ready to kind of, as we've said, wait for bad things to happen. I think it'd be nice to, like, watch them see the ball go through the net.
They may be a little bit past that now. My question to you is this. What if... somehow they upset Florida State.
All right.
Is there any scenario in which game day returns? Because the schedule, I don't know if it will dictate that.
Okay, let's see. All right, so if they beat Florida State, presumably, and we're saying they won their first two as well.
Right.
So you're sitting at 3-0 at Navy. MTSU, no. South Florida, no. Because that's on the road anyway. It's Friday night. I'm trying to remember the games that are not... the games that are actually on Saturday. I'm going to say no, simply because also you got to remember this year...
the best games are on the road.
Well, their best games are on the road. And then this year also, you added Texas to every... you added Texas to the SEC, Oklahoma to the SEC, USC, UCLA, but mainly USC and Oregon, primarily, in terms of... big games. You've added those to the Big Ten schedule. I think there's really only like 1 week, and it's like late in November. I want to say maybe it's the UAB game.
Yeah.
Where there's even like not a marquee game. But yeah, I think schedule obviously doesn't help. But I think that's the other fascinating question. Heard asked this. I'd be curious to know what you think. If you gave the fan base, I'll stipulate it this way because I think you have to make... this is what makes it a fair hypothetical. If I gave the fan base Florida State no AAC title or lose to Florida State, you win the AAC, but you're not the playoff team. You're not the G5 playoff rep. What do you think most of the fan base would take?
I think they're primed for a playoff. You know, I think beating Florida State is maybe going back 20, 25 years with Memphis when you'd beat Ole Miss or Mississippi State or Tennessee. Now it's the playoff is there. That's got to be your only goal.
Okay, if I stipulate, though, you're going to win the league, but you're not going to make the playoff, does that change it?
Yeah, I mean, in what scenario do you make the playoff? Is there any?
So basically, if you make the toss up, beat Florida State or win the league, I think you have to say win the league. Because if you say win the league, you're making the assumption I'm basically got a 50-50 chance, if not better, to make the playoff. Yeah. And so I think you got to go that way. But if I stipulate you win the league and let's say Boise ends up being the G5 rep, your choice is beat Florida State, have the big, massive win, or win the league. How do you think most people would vote?
I still think they want to win the league, but
so I think it's better for Ryan to win the league.
Yes.
Like I think because there's also something about, yes, the Florida State day would be a big day, but there's something about when it's on the road.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Like part of like the UCF win that he got with Brady, the Mississippi State win, like part of it is that they're home games and everybody got to celebrate that day.
Yes.
Together. Rather than you're watching it largely on TV. It's an 11 a.m. game. And that's kind of the other like flip side. It's like you could probably have the biggest upset of the day that day. And it's funny how like if it happens at 11 a.m., like we just turn our attention to like whatever the nightcap is. And it's like it largely kind of gets lost in the shuffle. It's not like forgotten, but it throughout the course of the day, it just like you'll see it on the break-ins when Memphis knocks off Florida State, but like everyone kind of gets back to focused on whatever the marquee games are.
You know, they had the big win way back when Isaac Bruce was here, and they beat USC on the road to start the year. But then USC ended up being, I don't know, 4-7. And then, you know, the biggest win on the road against a quality opponent was Louisville, I think during D'Angelo's run, like maybe his junior season. They went on the road, beat a good Louisville team, and beat them bad.
I think it was Brian Brohm, right?
Yeah, it was 38-7.
I know they don't win that game the next year. That was still one of the more fun football games I ever attended. Yeah. The Liberty Bowl Thursday night,
yes.
Louisville,
yes.
Where it was like first punt loses.
Yes.
And ironically, it was like you thought that's how you felt the game was going. And then when Louisville did punt, I remember turning my buddies like, they're going to win. And I missed that one. I'm trying to remember. So week three, so that you've got Alabama. That's the Wisconsin-Alabama at Camp Randall. So that's what you're going up against at 11 a.m. with the Memphis-Florida State game. Then the afternoon, you've got A&M in Florida. And then what's ESPN's big night game? Georgia-Kentucky. That's not super big. And then, there's a chance that could end up being like the single big story of the day. That could last, yeah. which would be big. But the problem is when you start trying to identify a game day option, like the one week, I'm trying to remember, it's like, I want to say maybe it's like week 12, because it's a 14 week this year. Everybody gets two byes because of Labor Day being early. And I just don't think there's going to be a game. Because that was the other part of game day. It wasn't just Memphis. You needed SMU to be good.
Yes.
And so, I mean, to me, it's like the only options, like the story games are, unless someone truly surprises us and is good in the league, it's still just going to be UTSA, South Florida, Tulane. Right. Those are all on the road.
Yes.
Okay, buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. Lee Diffie, the NBC Sports track and field play-by-play announcer. Totally redeemed himself with a 1,500-meter call.
I'll buy it.
Same. I think he got a little too much crap. First off, are we sure that they're there, like, in Stade de France?
I would hope so.
So, I think on track and field they are, but I'm always skeptical. They don't do the look in at the booth. And I know NBC and Universal, arguably one of the most evil companies in the entire country, they absolutely hate the consumer. There are a lot of people that are calling the sports, like, from Connecticut, remotely. And so, especially if he were remote, but I'm willing to say that at track and field, they were there. It seems like most of the remote stuff is the stuff that you're watching, like, live on Peacock. But, I mean, did anyone that watched the race, if you're just watching, did anyone not think the Jamaican guy won?
Right.
And so, like, everyone's killing him for just reacting. I mean, I guess you could have said, like, oh, well, we're going to have to go to the judges. But to me, it's like, we knew, I used the example of the Kentucky Derby this year had a photo finish.
Right.
We knew at the end, it's like, okay, well, that's a photo finish. This one didn't even feel to me like, okay, that's for sure a photo finish. It looked like he just won. Like, it was close, yeah. But you thought he just won. And so, he gets the massive blowback for honestly just doing, I think, what most everyone would have done. And I also think, like, there would have, like, it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, what could he have done? Yeah.
Like, if you sit there and go, I don't know, like, let's wait and see. We'll make fun of him like we do with Romo. Like, I don't know, Jim. Like, we make fun of, like, make a call, be assertive. It just felt like to me, like, that was one of those ones where I felt like the criticism really outweighed the actual offense, if you will.
Yeah.
His call yesterday, though, was incredible. And also, shout out to Kara Goucher, who was the analyst. She, like, straight up called the race on the, like, right out of the chute. She's like, Hocker needs to stay. He needs to stay with the pack. He's the best closer. If he stays with the pack, he can spoil everybody's fun. And she, like, right off the bat called the, I'm forgetting, the Norwegian runner from, like, the famous track family. She's like, he has to basically, like, old school Big 12 offense, get out in front, post a number that you can't catch.
Isn't that what we found out in the last couple of weeks is the, really, the stars in the analyst booth? I mean, we've had some pretty good, they've put some pretty good people in there to break down the different sports. And it seems to be as good as I've ever heard.
I think that's right. I am willing, though, to consider is part of that we don't know, like, a large portion of the...
You don't know the sport.
Yeah. We don't know the sport. But I do think the analyst, you're 100% right. I feel like the analysts, for the most part, have done a very good job of explaining what's happening while not feeling like they're treating you like an idiot.
Well, especially with sports.
Even though we are idiots.
But it's sports we normally don't see.
Correct.
During the course of a year.
But I think another part of it, like Lee Dickey Diffie is the exception. A lot of the announcer, the play-by-play people we've been hearing are people that we know. Even if they're not like the highest of profile, but like we hear Dan Hicks. We hear Rich Gannon. We hear golfers here, Rich Lerner, and like some of these people we are familiar with, whereas the analysts we're not familiar with, and then when they've done a good job, we're like, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Whereas I think it also shows part of announcing, like in the end, like with Romo, eventually everyone was going to turn on him, because when you come out of the box and everybody's like, isn't this amazing? Isn't this great? Eventually, it's like everything. We'll just find a way to tear you down. And then I also think he kind of regressed, because there was always that's going to be the thing that's interesting about Brady coming up this fall as he makes his debut. The common thought is when you just got out of the league, you're going to be really good, because for the most part, you still know everybody. Like, there's not enough roster turnover, not enough coaching staff turnover. So you've been preparing and playing for all these teams from just a year ago, or for Brady, it's a couple years ago. So there's an inherent familiarity, and you don't have to prep as much. And then what they've always said is the more removed you get from actually playing, it becomes more and more difficult, not because the game changes, but because you just don't have the familiarity. almost every job's got a new coach at, by that point, a new staff, a new regime. So I think inevitably there was always going to be a Romo fall, but it does also make you realize most of them are pretty good. It's yeah. just you hear them so much that you've just decided, like, it makes you realize kind of how subjective, really, whether or not an announcer is good.
If you go way back, and you remember Tim McCarver breaking onto the scene
yes.
as an analyst, and he had that Tony Romo moment.
Yes.
People loved him. He was telling you things that no analyst had ever told you. And then after about, I don't know, 6-7 years, people like Norman Chad, who was a TV sports writer.
And, his column was syndicated in the paper.
Yeah, he just...
His betting column was a must-read for me and my dad.
Well, he tore Tim up.
Oh, yeah.
He did not like him because he had gotten maybe tired of his cliches or something. But he still would point out things that would happen.
And then it's always... I feel like we do the same... We always have the same experience. As soon as that person's gone, you're like, man, I miss them.
Yeah.
Like, Smoltz does fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's also another problem, and I think I'd mentioned it with Connor last week. It seems to me now the play-by-play broadcaster is kind of becoming the same thing. Doesn't, like, if you look at the new crop, like, Nance kind of still has his style. Tirico, to a certain extent, has his style. Buck obviously has his style.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Joe Davis, he does very competent broadcasts, but, like, can I pick Joe Davis out from the 15 other Burkhart, like, all the rest of them? Like, I can't really... It seems to me this new crop of play-by-play announcers all sound very similar, and they all kind of have similar styles.
There are some in the ESPN family that all sound like Joe Buck.
Yes.
But I think Mike Tirico plays well.
Yes.
I think he's very listenable. He's... obviously, you know, well researched, but he just comes across as that guy you're talking to, you know, at a bar.
Exceptionally competent.
Exceptionally.
Like, but it does feel like we are losing the big game personality. Like, I mean, even Al now is still kind of feels like Al at times, if he's even interested when he's calling a game. But sometimes it feels like Al's doing an impression of himself, and it's just still not the same. But, like, we've just lost unique characters. And I think it's probably, in fairness to them, I think it's a result of that's how they think they get at jobs.
It is.
Like, as more and more money has been poured into it, more and more corporate decision makers want someone that's just going to, no one's going to feel one way or the other about them.
Right. And they're going to be safe enough that they don't lose their
For
job.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of it. All right, buy, sell, short, or go to Reddit. The FedEx St. Jude Championship needs a reboot.
Oh, I don't know. I might sell it only because I don't know if we've given it enough time.
Yeah. I think I'm going to short it. I think even if you did do a reboot, I don't think it would matter. And why I say that is as follows. The PGA Tour has forever and ever, really under Dean Beaman and under Tim Fincham, they largely operated under the policy of let the tournaments, we'll supply the purse, but let the local people run the tournament. They know the market, let them run it. And it allowed for tournaments to kind of have a unique feel. What has happened in the Monahan regime, for a lot of reasons, for kind of the same reason we're talking about with announcers, there's been more money. But Monahan's regime has been very... Their mission has been largely, we want the tour to be kind of the brand, rather than tournaments themselves. And having a unique feel is not really what they are going for. They want it to be the PGA Tour, and it's a tour stop. Basically, honestly, like making it like a tour in the sense of it's like a concert where you may see this band in Dallas, or I might see them in Nashville, you might see them in Dallas. We saw the same show. Same, you know, make it look the same. The golf courses are a little different, but have the same feel and approach. And so because of that, you wind up having tournaments that are not really distinguishable for the most part. And I just don't necessarily think that's the fault of, like, the people that are going to get blamed are the people that are running the tournament. I don't think it's their fault.
No, I don't either. And I mentioned this earlier. I think that, you know, people are still getting used to the top 70 coming here.
Yeah.
And they had been used through the years. I mean, this tournament, if it had just started maybe 5 years ago, it had come to Memphis for the first time, I think there might be a different, maybe a different feel for it. But they had this tournament since 1958. And for so many years, I think that the community and the fans got used to a little bit of a local flavor.
Yeah.
Whether it was someone qualifying or maybe a Memphis bred golfer who may not be in the top 70, but he was able to get into the tournament. So there's some of that. I don't know if it brought huge crowds back then when you had a Doug Barron or David Gossett in the field, but I think it did. It did lend a little bit of a storyline.
Didn't my buddy Jonathan Fly, when there a year where like he was like made not only made the cut, he's like kind of in the mix.
Yes,
like, I remember that. I definitely think that is a broader PGA Tour problem,
mm-hmm.
And so we see it because that's like through our prism, but like. Technically, the BMW Championship is the Western Open, which once upon a time was considered on par with the U.S. Open and other major championships, but the tour got its paws on it. They killed the history. It's not even an open. It's invitational. Like, it's so, like, same thing, L.A. Open was a big-time open championship where you could qualify, whatnot. It's now just the Genesis Invitational. And so they've killed a lot of history for almost every event. So we see it because that's our experience with it, but it's happened almost every tournament.
Yeah.
And I guess the other thing, I think if you still gave me the option of the fields with having some local flair and having maybe the cool story or this, I think I'm still taking this.
Oh, absolutely.
Despite the fact that you miss the other parts of it. But I think the other problem that the tour is starting to see is we don't really – I'm under the impression, or it's my opinion, I should say, the game of golf is doing very well at the amateur level or the recreational level. Maybe not the amateur level. The recreational level. I don't think people have ever been more bored with PGA Tour, like pro golf.
But why is that?
I think it goes back to the same old adage, always you can point your finger, labor dispute. In the end, we don't really care whether or not you're making $50 million. We don't care if you're making $35 million. Like, I think we can like conceptualize, yes, they have like certain guys have a gripe. But in the end, we just want to see the best guys play against each other. And we just don't. Now we have split tours. Mm-hmm. No one really cares about either of them. And we've now just inadvertently made the majors a much bigger deal.
Yeah.
And so I think that's hurting. But I will say, if they want to do a rebrand, I'm fine with it in the sense that it seems to me if you're going to have the quote unquote successful event, you're just not going to get an audience of hardcore golf fans. There's really, in particular, there's only one event that does that, and it's in Augusta.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. But if you look at every other PGA Tour event that has big crowds and whatnot, it's because they figured out a way to tap. They've made it. It's not just the golf tournament.
It's an event.
Correct.
And that's what it is at the. At the FedEx St. Jude.
And even the U.S. Open's kind of the same thing. Like, mm-hmm. when the U.S. Open gets big crowds, it's not because they're getting just all golf fans. Like, that's why you'll hear somebody hit a drive and hear mashed potatoes at the U.S. Open. You don't hear it at Augusta.
You know, that's why I always hoped that Tiger Woods would have made one appearance here. I just would have liked to have seen the throngs of people that would have shown up and followed him. Because, you know, going back, you know, a few years back, Venus Williams played tennis here in a when they had a women's event, and it was an entirely different week. It was an amazing week in terms of people coming to the event, a different crowd, a different energy.
I mean, I think the best example is I was living in Winston-Salem when it happened. Tiger, one of the years where he was like coming back from injury, made the decision to play the Wyndham, which was Greensboro's tournament. That's the tournament that's this week. And like, it's historically one of, like, we talk about bad fields. You think about the old school
John Deere.
It's above the Deere. It's like above the Deere and above opposite field events. Like, you're not Punta Cana. You're not the Rio Tahoe Stableford. But it's one of the worst fields of the year. And Tiger made the decision to play to try to get qualified for the FedEx Cup. And they had to reprint tickets. Because, like, and I don't blame, like, the schedule's like, yeah, we're supposed to, like, have a cap at 25,000 tickets a day. Like, we just printed more. You was like, they sold them all. I mean, it was insane. I think there was, like, 50,000 people one day.
You would have been amazed to see the plans at the FedEx had he come in terms of just security.
The Ireland day?
Oh, yeah.
When we were waiting till, like, 5 p.m.
Same.
And then we acted like Kyle Porter really offended us by saying a golf course on the ocean is prettier than a golf course that backs up to the headquarters of FedEx. That was something. All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. We're going to get into the list. We'll start hour number two also with Tim Murray. We'll talk some college football. We'll get into the big stories of the day. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Jeffrey and company make a list of the biggest stories, both good and bad, that we need to talk about. This is The List.
You just made the list!
Presented by Birdies 901, Memphis's place for virtual golf. The List on 92.9.
Team USA.
You just made the list!
Yeah, the U.S. women are in their quarterfinal matchup. That's a game that you can watch over on USA. They currently lead Nigeria 10-4. Phil, I feel pretty confident that they're going to get their 60th consecutive win.
Yeah, I wouldn't vote against it.
I mean, it's insane when we saw Team USA do what they did yesterday with the men, when you realize that as dominant as they are, they're still nowhere even close to as dominant as the women are.
No, and I got to hear Charles Barkley this morning kind of break down that team. He was
What did Chuck have to say?
He knew some of the players.
Some,
but he was
more,
he was impressed.
More or less than, of course, in fairness to Chuck, he doesn't even know half of the NBA right now. But also, there's nothing better than when you get to tournament time, and he's just watching the game, and he's literally watching the game like if you and I went to like one of those a jamboree or something, and we're just seeing a bunch of teams, and so we don't know everyone. It's like number four. You just start calling. Like, whenever he starts giving you the analysis like that, it's like, that's when Chuck is cooking with gas.
Yeah, that was some of the case this morning.
It also kind of goes back to the point I was making about with Romo and with other analysts. Chuck has the greatest gig in the world in the sense that we don't really care that he doesn't know anyone. That's part of it.
Yeah.
Whereas we're up in arms about a play-by-play guy that announces to the naked eye that it looked like the Jamaican guy won, and we're up in arms that we didn't announce that the American had won.
Yeah. It's almost like Snoop, too, right? You just love him being – people just love him being there, and, you know, it doesn't really matter.
Snoop gets to be Snoop.
He gets to be himself.
Yeah. I will say it doesn't bother me because I'm not as locked in on the primetime coverage as I think if you're someone that basically your Olympic experience is you – maybe hear results during the day, but you're really waiting. Like, this is how Calkins consumes. Like, he doesn't really watch anything. He keeps up, but he doesn't watch anything until the prime time. And, like, he sits down, and that's how he consumes it. It seems to me that a lot of people have decided it's a little too much Snoop now.
Yeah.
Have we? I don't, like, that's the unique thing about Barkley. I don't think we've ever been to a point where, like, it's too much Barkley.
No. I think you enjoy his personality on the set. Even if he says number 14 looks pretty good today, you know that's who he is.
And I'm trying to think, like, what would be the difference between, like, and I think, see if you agree with this. I think the difference between, like, Snoop and Barkley is, with Barkley, there's a little more poking fun at himself. And with Snoop, it's not that he's afraid of joking about himself, but that's not part of the mantra.
He's just fun.
Right. Yeah. The mantra is, you know, I'm here to have a good time. Mm-hmm. I'm here to party. Like, and whereas with Barkley, there's a little bit more back and forth, and so I think it gives itself a little bit more longevity.
Yeah.
But I am very curious to see if my suspicion's correct that what Barkley is now doing, because now he's publicly saying I'm with Turner. My gut tells me that's Charles has been told, you got to say this, because Turner has to make it seem like they want to keep you.
Yeah.
Because where Turner is right now, or Warner Brothers Discovery, however you want to say it, they are in the we need people to cut us checks mode. And if Turner makes it legitimately seem like they are intending to keep you, well, then we can get them money, and then we can get you to the open market. We got to play the game. Because that's my suspicion what's happening, because while, like, let's think about, like, what does TNT still have property-wise? So now you're going to have NHL. You're going to have a dusting of college football. You have half of the NCAA tournament package. And then baseball, MLB.
Yeah. And the NCAA package is probably...
Are you really going to pay someone $20 million? Like, that's the other thing. Like, they've kind of branded for their NHL coverage. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, are you just going to throw Barkley into... They've built the NHL desk, and they've built the MLB desk. Like, are you really just going to pay him $21 million to, like, go and just step on someone's toes? Like, it doesn't make sense to me that that's what their actual plan is.
They tossed out something this morning that... They're not averse to maybe putting together their own NBA type show.
So I think it was Richard Deitch that mentioned it yesterday. It was either Deitch, Marshawn, O'Rand. So when CBS lost the NFL the first time, so when Pat and Madden went to Fox, they kicked around the idea because they basically, what people, I don't know if people realize, like, CBS basically invented the pregame show.
Yeah.
With the NFL Today.
Mm-hmm.
They kicked around the idea of keeping the NFL Today, and then they decided against it because it's essentially promoting a competitor's product. And so most believe that that's not really an option for TNT. Because, like, why? And also think about it, this. I don't even think it got as personal between CBS and the NFL. Clearly it didn't, because they went back. But it didn't even get as personal between CBS and the NFL as it has between Turner and the NBA. Mm-hmm. Because in the end, it was like, well, Rupert Murdoch's like putting a dump truck full of cash and nobody can match that number. It was kind of like, CBS was like, we can't match it. It was honestly, it was very similar to what CBS did with ESPN and the SEC, where CBS largely went into the negotiations intending to keep the 2:30 SEC game. ESPN came in with a number, and like, I was reading stories of people that were in the room, like, they were like, take timeouts in the negotiation and like walk out of the room going, where are they coming up with this number? But like, that's not really what happened with Turner. It was, they've tried to play hardball and say, like, we don't need it. We don't need it. I mean, that's what Zaslav said. And then turns out he did kind of need it. Although, I'm always woke on when guys like that, like, how much is, do they really, like, at the end of the day, do they want to win this court case and keep Tier 3 NBA and pay more than they were paying previously to have basically a B package and a bigger B package?
Or do they want to start a kayak cross league? They could do that.
It's true. It is hot in the streets. Maybe some rock climbing.
Rock climbing?
I did see some speed rock climbing today. Much better than whatever that thing I was watching 2 days ago.
Would you have ever thought cornhole would be on, you know, like ESPN?
I do not know when it started happening, but if you go now and you're flipping through, now's not the right time because I think they actually are like branding some stuff as ESPN the Ocho. But like, you can be watching, flip through the ESPN family of networks, and in the middle of May, we actually did like turn into the Ocho. Like, there was like this, I was watching one day, I still couldn't quite figure out, it was like three competing kickball, soccer, and maybe another kickball game, like going at the same time, something like Mega Ball. But you're right. Then we've had cornhole. Yeah. Oh, my favorite, though, that we've added, there's like an American Kennel Club, like just dogs jumping into pools. That one I like. Like, yeah. which dog can catch a toy the farthest? That one's a big one.
I've missed that one.
That you can flip that on. It's like American Kennel Club. Oh, corgi races, electric. Uh-huh. Unbelievable. Like, you will not see better TV than that. As we are speaking, the women have extended the lead 24-12. They are likely to move on. Did we have, I'm trying to think what I've seen today. There were some 200 like semifinals, but I don't think we've given out any hardware yet, have we?
No,
nothing that we care about. So more or less, that's the Olympic update, with the exception of Dennis LeBron James.
You just made the list!
Have you seen this video, Phil?
Tell me.
Yesterday, during the game, and LeBron had a nice game. They blow him out. LeBron's, like, it's, you know, you've reached the game's over, putting on the game is still technically going on. It's decided. He's putting on his warm-ups. And a standing ovation breaks out in the arena. LeBron thanks the crowd, and wait for it, puts his imaginary crown on his head. Slight problem.
Wasn't for him.
It was not for him. It was for Leon Marchand, the swimmer. He had walked into the arena, and all the French people. LeBron still remains, when he is unintentionally, when he is not trying to be funny, he is truly a comedic genius. He makes me laugh harder than anyone. But it's when he tries to be funny, it's painful. But when he's not trying to be funny, it is laugh out loud stuff. Like, you can't think it up. Like, this is the stuff that if you saw, like, these, if you pitch this like in a movie, everyone's gonna be like, come on, everyone's just gonna think that's stupid. But it's like, no, this is real life. It was awesome.
Did he take the crown back off?
No, he tried to like play it, like he tried to like sit and kind of like kept it going. But then the best part is, you gotta find the clip with with Ian Eagle's son, Noah Eagle and D-Wade, where they're trying to... D-Wade at first is like, that's what you get for being the GOAT. You get this kind of reception. And then Noah kind of sheepishly chimes in. He's like, I think that's for the swimmer. Leon Marchand's just come into the building. And then watching them navigate that moment, because normally that's just something like LeBron would get scrubbed from the internet. But now it's LeBron doesn't quite have the power at NBC that he does at ESPN, where we have to sit there. By the way, his Bryce has now been ranked in the top 100 thanks to On3.
All right.
I had a nightmare thought. So I was explaining to, I've got a couple of buddies that are like the ultimate LeBron stans. Like, they will just do anything. What if in, remember I told you in 2028, I want this to be their swan. They deserve this. They deserve the walk off. Like, they've carried this league. But I don't want to have to do this song and dance in 2028. What if LeBron gets Bronny on the team in 2028 in LA, their new adopted hometown, win one on the soil, get the whole gang back together?
Would it count the same if LeBron was on the bench as an assistant? He'd still be there.
I think the only way they could pull it off with Nike is if LeBron's playing. Like, that's Captain America. Look at this American story. Two generations bringing home the gold on home soil. Look at him doing this. It's one of those things where I don't think it could happen, but I don't think it's like a 0% chance.
Yeah.
Because
you're here at this point.
Correct.
So that you didn't think.
That media tour of LeBron trying to sell it. Like, this was earned. You know, year four, coming into his own in the league. Because then that led to the next question of, in 2028, where is Bronny? Because the point being, my friends were trying to pick at the other LeBron guys is he in Europe? Is he in Shanghai? Is he in the G League? Is he in the NBA? I had to point out the most important question. LeBron owning the Vegas team yet?
Oh.
Because if so...
Yeah. He could get on the team with an 8-point average.
He had to convince owners to have Bronny on the team this time. What if he is the owner?
You're looking down the right road, but...
Because I think the right answer, though, is he has either established that he is good enough to be, the back end of a bench guy and on a team, or I think he's an agent at Clutch.
Yeah, but did you think, he's gotten him in the league at this point. Does he need that 4 years from now? I don't know where his mindset will be in 4 years, but does he need to get his son on the Olympic team?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I you're right. So when you make sure I got you right. The logic being, part of this is him wanting to play with Bronny.
Yeah, but he's gotten that.
But if he's not playing, that's kind of the other question. It's like, are we certain he's not playing?
We're not.
It's not like he's not peak of his powers, but it's certainly not like he's slaw either.
Right.
There's an argument you made. He's the best player right now on Team USA.
Wait, how old was Jordan when he played last?
38, right?
Yeah.
I think Jordan had a few more dog years on him. Not sure. Not sure Jordan living and LeBron living is the same thing.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't know why I thought he'd gotten to 40, but.
I just wonder now with Brady playing to 46, yeah. And granted, it's very different.
Mm-hmm.
Brady could sit in the shotgun and avoid tackles and whatnot. Like, you can't really hide in the NBA.
Yeah.
But,
you can't be a kicker who's in his 40s.
How long did Vinatieri go? 48?
Yeah. Which is, way, way back. You had a George Blanda that was about the same age.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's like one of those ones where I think he's done playing at that point, but you could also talk me into this. He's not playing, but he's gearing up for one last Olympic run.
Yeah.
Team USA. We already saw LeBron crosses the Delaware.
Yes, we did.
Can you imagine, because it's going to be in L.A., it's going to be Hollywood. Can you imagine the production that they would put in?
Nike would love it. So, I can see it. I could see that being something that would happen.
All right, Mad Dog Russo.
You just made the list!
All right, speaking of announcers that can get away with it, did you see where Mad Dog killed the wrong Billy Beane?
No.
He announced that Billy Beane, the GM of the A's, had died when, indeed, it was Billy Beane, the executive at Major League Baseball, died of leukemia. Mm. But he killed the wrong Billy Beane.
Mm.
But Mad Dog's in that spot where it's like, Mad Dog, we kind of do the same thing with Mad Dog. It's like, yeah, we don't really expect him to get things that right. Like, it's just part of it. Like, he's not, that's not what he's there for.
The backlash was?
I think it helped that it was baseball.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. if he does this to an NBA or an NFL guy, there'd be the heads, you know, people calling for his head, making sure that he's not at ESPN. Jemele Hill would be calling for boycotts. Like, if he would have done that, we would have been in that territory. I think it greatly helped that it was baseball.
Yeah.
And also, even though Mad Dog Radio is successful, I don't know how many people actually, like, it seems to me Mad Dog's audience is just the people that listen to him at The Fan forever. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone has stumbled into Mad Dog in the last, 15 years.
Yeah.
It feels like it's, if you took sides from the Francesa and Mad Dog, if you took Mad Dog's side, like, you're still listening, but it doesn't seem to me that the audience is, like, massively grown.
Wait, where did he do this?
So Mad Dog, I guess we technically...
Was he on the air?
We tip our caps. So he was on ML, whatever. He has a Sirius channel. And okay. So he was on Mad Dog Radio.
Okay.
But, you know, originally him and Francesa basically invent the format that we have now at The Fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they hated each other and he went to Sirius. He kind of followed the Howard Stern blueprint.
Yeah.
Started his own Sirius thing. Appalachian State.
You just made the list!
Phil, we've got an all-time video right now making its way around the internet. We got a practice video of a young defensive lineman. Let's see. I don't know if we've identified names yet. So it's clearly I'll tell you what it looks like to me. It looks like somebody took their phone.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.